interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, September 24 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll live from Pete's on Johnston on 1037 The Game. Ben Love back out at Pete's. And the famous Clint D joining me, directing me for the next 3 hours inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I will break from protocol today. I'm giving you the guest list right out of the chute because it's changing a little from what you're used to on a Tuesday. This is an important programming announcement. Shea Dixon coming aboard at 4:15 today, as in like 11 to 12 minutes from now. Why? Well, they had an audible in Baton Rouge, and they have moved the Ed Ogeron press conference to 5 p.m. And so our boy Shea will be awfully busy during his normal run of Flip the Script. So you love listening to Shea Dixon on this program. You will get him today only at 4:15. So make sure you're strapped in for that. But I'll tell you this, we got somebody awfully good to take his spot at straight up 5 o'clock. We're going to New Orleans. Ken Trahan / Trahan, depending on where you're from. Talking New Orleans Saints football. And from 6 until 7, it's the reason we're back out at Pete's. On top of, you know, the little Pete's, the chips with the queso, and all the other good stuff. It's our third prep power hour of the season. And the STM Cougars are coming to Pete's. Excited about the program today. Now that you know the guest list, let's launch right in to some LSU injury updates, as well as the latest from the New Orleans Saints. And we'll take your calls as well. 706-0111. Number of players have been out for a couple of weeks, right? We all understand. Within the front seven, you've got some regulars that some are getting rest. Others are more legitimately dinged up. But you can add two more to the list from over the weekend. Wide receiver Terrace Marshall Jr., the sophomore from Bossier City, had surgery Sunday morning for a stress fracture in his left foot. According to a family member that spoke with Glenn Gilbo, the Daily Advertiser, 3 to 4 weeks, the duration that Marshall will be out. So in other words, maybe, just maybe, the Auburn game at the end of October. It seems like that could be a little soon. Ed Ogeron not willing to commit yesterday to that same time frame, just saying they do expect Marshall back at some point during the 2019 season. And what's he done so far? 6 TD catches to lead the Tigers. One of the leaders in all of college football. 300-plus yards in 4 games. In fact, LSU's big three of Marshall, Chase, and Jefferson all in excess of 300 yards. This one for me, though, shouldn't cause you, and it doesn't cause me, to hit the panic button. Why? The Tigers have similar players in terms of size, and frankly, in terms of experience, if not even more experienced, that they can plug in and play. Stephon Sullivan, more of a receiver during his time in Baton Rouge. These days, repping alongside Thaddeus Moss at tight end. Sullivan can come in and give you burn, as can Racy McMath, who in the absence of Marshall ended up with 5 catches, 48 yards, and a 6-yard touchdown against Vanderbilt in Nashville. I think that of the three big wide receivers, and I mean big in terms of productivity, not necessarily size here, I think this one might be the most expendable. And that's no pre-shade being tossed to Terrace Marshall. I just think that McMath in particular has a chance to fill that void, and Burrow will find open. Burrow will help you to high point the football if you've got the type of ridiculous size and stature that McMath and even Sullivan have. So for Marshall, on the offensive side, we'll take it to the defensive side of the football. Linebacker Michael Divinity left the ball game Saturday with an ankle injury. Ed Ogeron yesterday said it might be a couple of weeks, not as bad as it looked on film. Good time for a bye week. LSU will be back at it October 5th. An early kickoff, Bloody Mary start against Utah State. the following week, Florida on October the 12th. And I'll bet a dime to your dollar that that's a 2:30 CBS kickoff. Florida right now, a top 8 team in the country, LSU a top 4 team in the country. Will Divinity be back in time for Florida? It'd be awfully nice. It's not written in stone yet. Now, who takes his place? I told you Sullivan, McMath, first up to backfill for Marshall. Well, it kind of depends. Divinity had been playing a good bit on the interior. That means more of Patrick Queen, more of Jacob Phillips, less splitting time for those two. Maybe a little more of Damone Clark, the youngster from Southern Lab. But on the outside, considering that Kalevon Chaisson's been out, what an opportunity for Ray Thornton, Andre Anthony, maybe even a guy like Jarrell Cherry. I know he's a more traditional defensive end, but I think all pass-rushing options will be explored. Even someone like Marcel Brooks can help offset the loss, I think, of Divinity and or Chaisson for a short period of time. We'll go split screen here in our opening segment. Yeah, we're moving fast on a Tuesday. From LSU on the injury front to some pretty phenomenal Alvin Kamara stats when we talk Saints football. Pro Football Focus graded Kamara's performance in Seattle as a 91.7 receiving grade. That is elite, not just for running backs, but for anybody that's catching the football at any position. But here is the truly mind-boggling tidbit for me to pass on to you. Kamara on Sunday forced 12 missed tackles. It's truly astounding, especially when you consider he basically broke 6 ankles slash ran through 6 tackles on runs, and an equal 6 came on catching balls out of the backfield. So Alvin Kamara, a 91.7 receiving grade the other day. Broke 6 tackles running it, 6 catching it. The guy's an absolute freak. And here's a spoiler alert, in case you haven't seen the latest edition of Ballers on HBO. Clearly I have. If you love the show and you haven't tuned in since it aired Sunday night, I mean, hell, I've given you just about 48 hours, but earmuff it if you haven't seen the latest edition. Kamara's featured. And for those of you that haven't and will never watch the show, this might entertain you. AK-41 is a target of the Los Angeles Rams. So a fictitious GM of the Rams is out there trying to poach Alvin Kamara, who just happens to be on the West Coast during this given episode. So let's go ahead and make sure that doesn't find its way into real life. I understand that Todd Gurley dealing with some injury issues. They're not rushing the Gurley man back into production, but you keep your paws off of Alvin Kamara. He ain't going anywhere. Our final split screen as we open up today's program from LSU to the Saints. How about big news for the Raging Cajuns, but not just for one sport, for all of them. Earlier this morning, the Cajuns announced that they've entered a 3-year partnership making Adidas the official footwear, apparel, and accessory brand of the Raging Cajuns through the 2021-2022 season. So you better get used to that 3-stripe life, my vermilion and white friends. Big program today, as we told you. On the other side of this quick recess, Shay Dixon, he'll put school back in session. And it's going to be all flipped the script. We've only got one segment today, only one go. All of his questions to me, it'll be LSU football heavy, a little bit of a look around college football as well. So stick with us. Plenty of show to go as we're live at Pete's on Johnston. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
We're going to do things different. To flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shay Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know, I'll flip.
Had a quarter to past four? I don't know that I compute, but we're going to try. Shay, hopefully you're coolio with the 4 o'clock hour, but ready to chop it up with you. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yes, thank you for fitting me in. LSU with the bye week did a lot of moving and shaking. They didn't only redo the offense, but they also redid all the media time. So we've got Coach O at 5, so I'm coming to you in the 4 o'clock hour.
The offense, I guess, shakes the earth underneath its feet. The defense suffers a little bit. LSU moves its, you know, interview sessions around, and we suffer a little bit. It's okay. We understand the ebb and flow. But this is flip the script time. What do you have for me?
Well, we got to go LSU. I mean, we're four games in, 4-0. I want to ask you a handful of questions here. Let's get it rolling. Off top, you mentioned the defense. I'll shoot you with one just here straight. Four games into his college career, fresh out of high school, 18 years old, is Derek Stingley the best player on LSU's defense right now?
You said right now, and so I'll say yes. Currently, I think that he might just be. But Grant Delpit's pedigree suggests he can retake that mantle at just about any moment, and that would be a welcome thing for LSU fans. I think that Christian Fulton as well certainly has proven his stripes in just one full year of playing time for the Bayou Bengals. But right now, what this kid is doing, matching up against some of the best in the country that played for Texas, taller receivers, seeing what he did on the road at Vandy with the big interception, understanding what he also means in the way of punt returns, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that the kid from Dunham High School is their best, most productive player right now. But Chaisson could be that if he's healthy and right, which I'm not sure he completely is. Delpit certainly could be that way. Fulton as well. So he has that title today. Ask me in a few weeks, and we'll see.
He's been impressive. Leads the nation in pass breakups. I know everybody knew he was a stud. He might be exceeding it. Okay, you mentioned Delpit, and I'm going to ask you straight up, what's wrong with Delpit might be the wrong way to put it, but Ben, last year, six interceptions in that range. He led the team. He has none right now. He was a little over six tackles a game a year ago with Devin White out there making 100-and-something tackles. He's barely at four tackles a game right now, missing tackles. What's the deal with the guy that you probably would have answered is LSU's best defensive player?
I don't have a great answer to that. If I did, I'd be making millions of dollars. Here's my only basis of comparison, and maybe I'm on an island with this one, Shay. I thought that Jamal Adams had an incredibly mediocre sophomore season. And then we saw what he did when he bounced back as a junior and catapulted himself kind of back to where he was coming out of high school, right? From a top eight player in his class, well, he was a top eight draft pick when he came out the other side as a pro prospect. So I'd like to tell you that sometimes it just happens and that you have these type of seasons. But here's the difference. This is the definitive money lottery push season for Delpit. Why he is anything below spectacular, I don't know. And I think this is one of the young men on the team that's pretty darn well grounded, right? I don't think he reads his clippings and gets too full of himself. So I think that would be foolish to suggest that that's the problem at hand. So I don't know if it's mechanical. I don't know if he's not watching the type of film, not understanding tendencies. I don't think he's protecting himself, right, to be a pro next year. I don't think it's anything like that. So I'm kind of at a loss here. But I saw it early in that Texas game. He didn't look like he was one of the enforcer impact-type players on LSU's team, and that's what everybody's kind of become to know him as. So I wish I knew what was going on with Delpit, but hopefully somebody lights a fire under his backside because they need him to be some semblance of what he was last year.
I think a lot of people are going to knock on him so far, at least for missing some tackles. But I think one thing that isn't only specific to Delpit is missing tackles. A lot of guys have missed them. This is a general question. Orgeron says we just need to clean up tackles. Can a team that hasn't really tackled well in the first four games, is that something you can turn around as the season goes on, or is that something that just becomes an issue for you across the course of 12 games?
Well, I'm not a negative Nancy on the subject, but my gut tells me that in general, the answer to that question is I don't know that you can get a lot better than that during the season, because you're getting less and less physical in your practices for the most part, and that's kind of an Ed Orgeron staple as compared to Les Miles anyway. So I guess you could make a case that maybe your guys are fresher, right? Once they're healthy, they'll tackle better. But the guys that are healthy right now aren't tackling terribly well. And, yes, they've seen different type of offensive attacks. I mean, ones that are more ground game in base, Georgia Southern with the triple option, what we just saw from Vandy. They've seen a running quarterback in Ellinger who also threw the daylights out of it, and it hasn't particularly mattered, other than the Georgia Southern game, what type of attack they've seen. They haven't been down in, down out, sure tacklers. So I'm not sure how that part gets better in the season, except to say that once your studs are healthy, that you've just got better players on the field. And if better players are out there with more consistency and they're healthy, it should stand to reason that the team will tackle better collectively, but I don't know that that's a guarantee. And I'm hoping it won't be a season-long issue, but I don't know. I think it's quite possible that it may be.
Well, let's flip it. Let's go back onto the offensive side for a couple questions. Clyde Edwards-Helaire went over 100 yards in the game against Vanderbilt. But look, they on a day that they threw for 6 touchdowns and, you know, nearly 2,000 yards through the air, they hit about 200 yards rushing. John Emery got involved. Ty Davis-Price got involved. What's the end goal for these two freshman running backs who we see starting to get more involved each week, but they're getting involved when the game's kind of already been decided? Is this Clyde's team for 12 games, or is there some plan in place to say, hey, we want to be playing these freshmen in the first quarter against Auburn or, you know, Florida, Bama, whoever it might be?
I kind of am like you on this one. I detect a relative lack of trust early in the ball game for basically anybody that's not Edwards-Helaire. And they've shown a propensity over the last 2 seasons. They'll toss it out on flare routes to Leonard Fournette, but that's really been about it. It's Clyde's show, usually in the first 8 to 10 minutes of a ball game. I think baby beast mode Chris Curry has almost been completely buried on the depth chart. So what does that tell us? It seems to me that it's Edwards' show early, that they'll sprinkle in the hot, healthy hand out of the two freshmen. And our good mutual friend, Shay, Hunt Palmer, came on this show last week. He said he believed everything he's witnessing, what he's heard, that it's more likely to be Ty Davis-Price that becomes number 2 in command. This game against Vandy suggests that it's John Emery. I think that it's maybe a combination. In other words, I think this staff offensively is making sure that both Emery and Ty Davis-Price get some run, and they'll start to mix both of them in. So my gut tells me that it's Clyde's show early, even in SEC games, unless he's dinged up. And until these young guns can show that they can be trusted in pass protection, it's likely to stay that way. Now, which one of them is ahead of the other? Your guess is as good as mine right now. It does appear to me that Ty Davis-Price has more of the physique to where he could be an every-down type of back, but that's Clyde's job right now, so that may be more of a future thing. Emery appears to be more of a speed guy who has an opportunity to be a game-breaker on any given play, and that might fit in better for this year's plans.
When we talk about other guys getting involved, we're going to find out an answer to this question here in the next couple of weeks. But Terrace Marshall, obviously they've got a three-headed monster at receiver. Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Marshall have been awesome to start the year with Joe Burrow. But Marshall's out for what looks like could be, I don't know, a month. I mean, Orgeron said that he's had surgery. He's going to be out maybe a little longer than they thought, but he's hoping to get him back this year. My guess means that means Alabama or some point in November. But over this next month, you play some big teams. Who do you want to see involved at receiver that's not named Chase or Jefferson?
I think it's Racy McMath, and I discussed this off the top in today's show. Stephon Sullivan, Racy McMath have the best opportunities ahead of them with this injury to Marshall. McMath had a pretty big game, right? 5 catches, 48 yards, and a touchdown against Vandy. A lot of folks who've been out there to watch LSU during the summer and especially through fall camp in August said Racy McMath has the type of body size that you just can't teach, frankly. 7 or 8 years ago, this guy with his size would have been playing defensive end. So he seems to me to be maybe one of the most natural fits to fill in for Marshall. But there are a couple of guys who possibly could take that baton and run with it. But give me McMath.
I like the choice. I like the choice. He's out for the first half of Utah State, but I bet he comes back in the second half and into Florida. I'm with you as the guy. All right, let's wrap it up. This is a big picture question, but it's back to defense. They lose Todd Harris, one of the starting safeties. They were playing 3 of them for the year. You know, he's gone, not coming back. Chaisson has been in the lineup really once with the Texas game. Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan, your 2 starting defensive ends, were playing in the Texas game, haven't played since. Looks like they're both set to come back at some point in October. Knowing what you know, what is the most important piece to the team of that group? Like everyone keeps saying, when they get all these guys back, obviously Harris won't be back, but that they'll be better on defense. Which guy, and Tolson Divinity, who's been hurt as well, which guy in that mix is the most important to coming back and making an impact and making this defense maybe back then towards what we thought it would be?
To me, it's pretty clear the answer is Chaisson, followed maybe somewhat closely by Rashard Lawrence. And it's been somewhat disheartening, the lack of natural pass rush that LSU's been able to generate. And if Aranda has to do it through scheme, if he has to do it kind of old-school John Chavis style with some of the Mustang-style looks, I know, it's called something different in 2019. But you know what I mean. When it has to be six, sometimes seven DBs, it just leaves you susceptible. When you're able to be, I guess, formidable against the run because you've got, you know, at least three down linemen that are in, and you can generate a natural pass rush depending on what comes out of the backfield, that's the ultimate situation. Chaisson allows you to have that type of flexibility. And so without, you know, without your Montgomery Mingo type, without your Arden Key type, and that's the role that he's clearly fitting into now, or he's supposed to when he's healthy, you suffer, and you have to change stylistically what you do. So I'm going to tell you that it's Chaisson. After that, I'd give you Rashard Lawrence just because they love his versatility. And without Apu-Aika, I guess having full trust yet in the middle of that D-line, when it's not Shelvin, it could be somebody like Lawrence. So certainly they missed the big man from Neville, too.
I like it. Ben, the script has been flipped, and now I flip it back to you. I enjoyed it. Look, a little bi-week LSU football talk. It never hurt anybody. Never gets old.
Not even a little bit. Enjoy that Coach O presser. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Jay Dixon. Go247.com. We got to go into a break. When we return, we'll take your reaction to those questions. We'll also float out a sink or swim question of the day. I think you'll like this one. It's NFL related. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back out to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back at it. More of the good stuff. It's B2BS, and we are hanging out at Pete's on Johnston. And here's the deal. We've got the good stuff here. Hopefully you got the good stuff in your living room. When it comes to watching games, you want the best recliner possible. You at least don't want an ugly one. And yeah, we know. We asked you to submit photos of your ugly recliner for a chance to win a brand new one from 103.7 The Game and Bordelon's Home Furnishing. And we've got some tremendous submissions. In fact, we have chosen five finalists. And now we need your help to decide who should win. So take a look. Go to 103.7thegame.com. Vote for your favorite. Voting will take place until September 29th, that's this Sunday. So go select the ugliest recliner. Let somebody up their game, courtesy of us and Bordelon's Home Furnishings. Clint, I like when we rank things. I think our listeners do too. And we're going to do that right now. So it's not really a sink or swim question today, but on the other side of the music, oh, it's a ranker, all right.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim ranker of the day. Rank the top three teams in the NFL, comma, today, period. Don't look forward. Don't project. Don't tell me this will happen when the schedule gets easier or a star player gets healthier. You know, kind of like Breeze and the Saints. Today, give me the top three teams in the National Football League. Want to hear from you on this one. We got time between now and when Ken Trahan joins us from New Orleans in about 25 minutes. Give us a ring at 706-0111. Clint, feeling good today. I'm going to take the reins and go first. And I will go 1 through 3. Got to be the Kansas City Chiefs at 1. I told you I thought they would take a step back this year. That Mahomes, no chance. Does he maintain his clip? He was at 50 touchdowns last year. I told you he'd be at 40 or less this year. So far, I'm looking not a little wrong. I'm looking a lot wrong. And I don't mind telling you that. Now, things can happen, right? We're only 3 weeks in. But that passing attack looks lethal. And we talk all the time about finding open with the football. Mahomes is incredible because he doesn't just find open. He always seems to find open and deep. And it doesn't matter if it's Travis Kelce, DeMarcus Robinson, I think he helped Sammy Watkins to rise from the ashes like a phoenix. I kind of forgot he was in Kansas City before the season opener. The dude just finds open. Even former LSU Tiger Darrell Williams is getting a taste out in Kansas City. But the reason I'm going to put the Chiefs at the top, they've played at Jacksonville, at Oakland versus Baltimore. So probably only one real good team out of the bunch. But the defense, to me, is where they were abominable last year. They're clearly better this year. So far, three games in, I was wrong on Andy Reid and the Chiefs. But one thing we do know about Andy Reid teams, they could do this during the regular season and then turn into a pumpkin when the money's on the line. Time will tell. But I got Kansas City on the top right now. I'll take New England at two, but I'm not thrilled about it because the competition for them has been even worse than Kansas City. They've played Pittsburgh, they've played the Dolphins, and they've played the Jets. I believe New England is a very good football team because of years of conditioning and because of Tom Brady and because it doesn't matter if AB's out there at wide receiver, Chris Hogan, or somebody you and I have never heard of or forgot about that played college football, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. Brady's got a way of doing that. And I think this year they've got a team that, again, is in the upper crust of the league. I'll go Patriots too. Here's where I'm going to give you a team, Clint, that maybe you didn't expect. Give me Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers at three. They're undefeated. They have played a pretty good schedule as well. They just came off a win over the Broncos. They have played the Bears, an out-defense, a really good defensive team in Chicago, and they've played the Vikings. I like the competition they faced, and they've come out the other side 3-0. Aaron Rodgers looks right, and his defense suddenly is a top-five unit in the league so far. And so I'll go Kansas City, New England, and Green Bay. If you're asking me who's right after, it's probably Dallas and Baltimore. Sorry, I'm not giving love just yet to undefeated starts from the Bills, the Niners, the Lions. Truth be told, I would take Houston, and I would take a breezeless New Orleans over those three teams. But right now, Clint, I'll go KC, New England, and Green Bay. What say you?
For me, Ben, I got to start off with number one. It's got to be the New England Patriots. I agree with what you said. They played a lot of relatively easy teams, but at the same time, the fact that their defense has not allowed a touchdown through three games, that winds up putting them at the top of my rankings. And, of course, two touchdowns that the Patriots allowed last weekend was a pick six from Jarrett Stidham, and another one was off of a muffed punt. So I got to go with the Patriots at number one. Number two, I got to go with the Kansas City Chiefs because I've seen plenty of tape from them. They have just been absolutely outstanding. Every time you see Pat Mahomes under center, it is just amazing to see what Andy Reid can do with that kind of quarterback in his system. And also, the fact now they've got a whole lot of help on the defensive front as well. I think that's going to help them out as the season progresses. We're going to see them step their game up a lot more as the season progresses. They'll probably stay in my top three for quite some time. And the final team in the rankings, number three, is the Los Angeles Rams. And I think they're definitely, it seems like an easy way to put the top three together. But what the Rams have done over the first few weeks of the season has been nothing short of impressive with dominant wins.
And, you know, I should have had the Rams in my just after, kind of also receiving votes category. So I'm glad you brought them up. Conveniently, I forgot about the team and tried probably to forget about the team that jobbed the Saints in the NFC title game and got the better of them a couple weeks ago in La La Land. But I'd still put them behind Green Bay. I would. Now, their defense has been impressive to me, the Packers. So I'd probably have Dallas, Baltimore, and the Rams as kind of those next in-line teams. We'd love to get your take. 706-0111. Got to give some love and a shout-out to Cullen F. on Facebook. His top three, Chiefs 1, Pats 2, Cowboys 3. Cullen gave us a little more, though. Got to like it when people dig deep. Saints, he said, would be up there if Drew wouldn't have gotten hurt. That's also because I believe we'd be 3-0 if Drew wouldn't have went out against the Rams. Got to love the takes. And we'll take them on Facebook and on Twitter at 103.7 The Game. So still ranking our top three NFL teams today. Why don't we take a final rest in the 4 o'clock hour. When we return, we'll get more of your takes on the subject, and we'll keep going on LSU football. We know they're heading into a bye week, but a lot of important things happening So we'll get more to you on the other side of this break. We'll be right back out to Pete's on Johnston. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Huge show on a Tuesday as we're right back into Pete's on Johnston. We got the St. Thomas More Cougars coming in. It's the Cougars Prep Power Hour from 6 until 7. Jim Hightower and company coming aboard. I know Danny Jones will be here. We'll throw him on the air. Hopefully our guy Shane Savoy, Coach David LeBlanc, Cougars players. Who knows? We might have a couple of tricks up our sleeves as well. But excited for the Cougars to take over. You love STM football. You want to come and catch a glimpse of some of the guys that will be taking on Neville this week at home. Stop in and join us from 6 to 7. And if you can't make it, you can always listen in. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We ended the last segment. Clint gave his take. I gave mine. We took a Facebook submission. Top three teams in the NFL today. In some order, we both have the Chiefs and Patriots at the top. To me, that's fairly predictable. I like Green Bay at three. Clint likes the Rams. A couple of other teams certainly probably jam-packed right in there if you were to do four through seven. But I'll introduce this into the discussion. Where are the Saints? And how do we judge the Saints on a league-wide basis? I think it's tough because just nature forced a lot of people, and I'm raising my hand right now, to say without Breeze and staring down the barrel of at Seattle versus Dallas in consecutive weeks, I think that just instinct and nature forced us to say it's not going to be a kind couple of weeks to a team that's 1-1 without their franchise player for the last 13-plus seasons. This could be a year in which the Saints are lucky to get to the bye week at 4-4. Now that has to be rethought, at least a little bit. Is it because of the way that Bridgewater and the offense played? Not exactly. They did enough to win. As I told you yesterday, I thought, in a turn of irony, they won that game in Seattle. Like a lot of the Les Miles LSU teams, kind of were forced to win games. Excellent, opportunistic defense with turnovers. Special teams making a difference, scoring points, and not just with their feet. And then big plays when you need them on offense, which basically, for the Saints on Sunday, meant Alvin Kamara. We told you earlier in today's show, AK-41 broke 12 tackles at the home of the 12th man. Six on run plays, six on receiving plays. That is absolutely incredible when you really think about it. But here's where I'm driving. If the Saints can beat the Cowboys, if they do back-to-back weeks without Breeze and beat a playoff team from a year ago in Seattle with one of the best dual-threat quarterbacks in the league, the NFL's top run game from a year ago, and then they beat Dallas, who's off to an incredibly hot start. Dak Prescott playing out of his mind right now. Zeke Elliott healthy, happy. 200-yard rushers for that Cowboys team last week. If the Saints beat those two teams back-to-back, suddenly we have to have a conversation in which they are in the top three. And I do mean the right now top three variety, not, hey, you know, once Breeze gets back, boy, they're really going to be dangerous. Because while that might be true, a Saints team that's got a chance to get fat on Jacksonville, a chance to get fat playing Tampa, not exactly the most difficult portion of the schedule coming up before the bye week at the end of October. I know the Bears are sprinkled in there. The Saints could legitimately get to that thing. Who knows? Maybe 6-2. Perhaps 5-3 at worst if they find a way to win again this Sunday night. And so I don't think it's fair to say the Saints are a top three team right now with the way they played. But then again, we all recognize the only loss was at the Rams. Bridgewater thrown in. I mean, right in the midst of a game where nobody wants to get tossed into the fire. And then, of course, there's the Cam Jordan touchdown return that went for naught. The Saints go into the half leading at L.A. if that stands the way it is. And an inadvertent whistle doesn't job Houdat Nation out of another touchdown against the Rams. Or at least another big call against the Rams. So, Clint, I don't know how you feel about that. I think the Saints still are a top 10 team in the league, even without Breeze. I think with the win against Dallas, we have to completely reconfigure the way we look at them, even in the interim.
Exactly, Ben. I think that's the biggest thing is you need to have an idea of this top 10, and you brought it up perfectly. I saw a lot of the power rankings after week three have them in the top 10. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that through 3 weeks of the season, there's a lot of pretenders. We bring up Buffalo. I think Buffalo could be one of those teams that's in that top 10, probably a top six team in the league just because of their record and what they've been able to do. And it's been impressive. I think the Saints are probably a top 8-9 team in the NFL right now. A lot of it has to do with the fact there's a lot of teams in the NFL that sink towards the bottom in any other year. I mean, we look at it, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the New York Giants, they finally started to figure out how to win again. The Cleveland Browns, can you buy them and all they've had with the hype, and now they've lost two straight games thanks to some really bad coaching. I feel like I can say right here, right now, the Saints are a top 10 team. A lot of it has to do with the utter trash in the NFL once you get past that.
And this is the first week where we start to see teams on bye. And so this is where there gets to be an interesting rhythm to the season. Saints, as I mentioned, have theirs at the end of October, so eight straight weeks of football. Where will they be at that time? And where will Drew Brees be at that time? Our man aggressively rehabbing his thumb in Southern California this past week. So how long will it take him to get right, get back to Metairie, and do more than just be a tremendous coach on the sideline, more than just an inspirational figure? Because clearly he's been all of those things, right? And I love the sound that came out of Seattle yesterday. Demario Davis asked Drewby if he could lead the team in the pregame shout-outs in the warm-ups. Alvin Kamara saying the first thing he did after the win is go text Drew Brees. So, look, the guy is on everybody's brain right now. But what happens when his thumb is right? And how good can the Saints be? Where will their pole positioning be in the standings when he returns? So many things that are unknown, but the Saints have an opportunity to put a stamp on the type of team that they'll be all season long, even without Drew, with a win this week at home against Dallas. All right, we told you we'd talk a little LSU in our final segment of the 4 o'clock hour. Terrace Marshall Jr., Michael Divinity, both going to be on the shelf and likely for different lengths of time. For Marshall, who had surgery on Sunday for a stress fracture in his left foot, 3 to 4 weeks is what a family member told Glenn Gilbo, the Daily Advertiser. I don't think Ed Ogeron willing to stake his claim to that time period just yet. As far as Michael Divinity, O was a little more definitive. Might be a couple of weeks, he said, not as bad as it looked on film, as Divinity left the Vandy game with an ankle injury. But now you've got an opportunity coming out of a bye week for some of the next guys in line to step up. Seems like that's been a theme all football season long already in South Louisiana. For the Saints, it's obvious who's going to step up and fill the void of Breeze. For the Cajuns, well, they had to do it for Chauncey Manack, especially late in the ballgame Saturday at Ohio. Might have to do it again this Saturday afternoon in Statesboro. For LSU, more injuries to deal with than probably any of those three programs or franchises. They've been worried about Rashard Lawrence, been worried about Kalyvon Chaisson, and now we understand that in the back, Harris is out for the season at safety. So without Todd Harris, is it going to be Kerry Vincent? So there are a lot of questions so far, but these next two that we're learning more about early in the week, I think Stephon Sullivan and in particular Racy McMath are next up in the absence of Marshall. And with Divinity out, no timeshare between Patrick Queen and Jacob Phillips. You need them both. Maybe even sprinkle in a touch of Damone Clark. As for the outside linebackers, if it's Divinity and Chaisong that are out next Saturday morning when Utah State comes to town, well, boy, that's going to be interesting. And the Tigers probably will never be in any danger of losing to the Aggies from the Mountain West Conference. But here's the reality. If you're without both veteran edge rushers as far as outside linebackers are concerned, and you've got a pass-happy attack, hey, you've just got some scheming to do. And an opportunity for Andre Anthony, Ray Thornton. I mentioned earlier Jarrell Cherry, who could come back for defensive end, possibly stand up, maybe even Marcel Brooks coming down from a hybrid safety outside backer position. A lot of guys have opportunities, and you can't just pigeonhole people in positions in this day and age. Dave Aranda knows that better than most. All right, a full 3-hour show today, just about a third of the way through. CD, let's put a bow on hour number one with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Mantra, and there is a brand new mantra and war cry for the New Orleans Pelicans. How about this one, CD? WBD has been seen all over town. It's been all over shirts that Drew Holiday's wearing and Instagram posts. Everybody says, what does WBD mean? And today we learned, won't bow down. So Alvin Gentry is back. Zion Williamson in. David Griffin leading the franchise. WBD, people, they will not and they won't bow down in the Big Blenda. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back and talking Saints with Ken Trahan. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out every Tuesday at Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. Back out to Pete's on Johnston. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Big 5 o'clock hour for you. Ben Love here, the famous Clint D, joining me from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Pretty easy adage when you host Afternoon Drive Radio. You save your best for the top of the 5 o'clock hour. I think we've done that. So let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Ken Trahan, owner, CEO, CrescentCitySports.com, and GM, chairman of the board for the Saints Hall of Fame Museum, is with us. Ken, how are you today?
Hey, doing fine, Ben. Thank you.
One game in without Drew Brees, one full game in. How would you evaluate the offense and, I guess, what the return game did, what the defense did to maybe lighten the load for Bridgewater and company?
Well, obviously, it was exactly what they needed, contributions from every other aspect of the team to help navigate the rough waters. And I thought as the game went along, Teddy Bridgewater got more comfortable, and clearly they're going to plan it differently. I think you saw a lot of 22 personnel in this game, and with two tight ends, two running backs, a lot of that is compared to the open formations we've seen previously with Drew Brees. It's going to be a different approach, and it should be a different approach. And if the Saints are able to run the football effectively, it's going to take a lot of pressure off of Teddy Bridgewater and make play action work very nicely. Look, I thought given the fact that it was his first meaningful start since a playoff game in 2016 and the 2015 season, that he did a really nice job. You know, he completed 70% of his passes. He didn't make any mistakes, kept it short and conservative. And although he held the ball a little long, which he's been apt to do, he got rid of the ball fast enough to where he avoided sacks. And I thought that was important as well. So, look, they're going to get more comfortable with him. Reps and more reps with the starters is going to help. This is a guy that's 18-12 as a starter in the league, so it's not as though he can't do this. And I suspect they'll be okay. Obviously, I think when you look at their division, they didn't need to really be in great shape moving forward. They just needed to be in solid shape, and because their division, frankly, isn't very good. And once Drew Brees got hurt, the thinking was if they could get to the bye week at 4-4, they'd be okay. Well, right now they're a little bit better than that at 2-1, and they're coming home. Of course, they're facing a good team, and they're an underdog at home in this game against Dallas. But so far, so good. And if you get that kind of contribution from your special teams and your defense, well, clearly the opportunity to win is going to be far greater.
I'm with you. It was all hands on deck, all three phases. And I think a lot of media members, especially fans, believed it would have to be all hands on deck to replace Brees at quarterback. That meaning more Taysom Hill as well. That's not what we saw on Sunday. Did that surprise you, and do you think it remains that way?
Yeah, no, I expect it to be pretty much the same. Teddy Bridgewater's their quarterback. They doubled down on him. They traded a third-round pick to get him, and then, of course, they made him the highest-paid reserve quarterback in the league. So he's their guy. Taysom Hill will continue in the role that he's had previously, but they've got to be careful with that, too, because he is their backup quarterback now, and they certainly can't afford him to be injured. So they're going to manage what he does pretty well also, but there'll be some things in there for him as well, as there always are within the context of the offense. And with regard to Bridgewater, I think they'll give him a little bit more leeway moving forward. They're going to have to because this Dallas defense is quite good. Last year they really handled the Saints in Arlington, and Saints couldn't run the ball, and they really couldn't throw the ball. They couldn't do anything offensively against them, and their linebackers match up pretty well with Alvin Kamara, as well as anybody can. And we saw that last year, and of course they'll do everything they can to take Michael Thomas away and make somebody else beat them, and the Saints have to prove that they have someone else that can possibly do that. They don't have Mark Ingram, who's playing extremely well for Baltimore right now. They don't have Traquan Smith, at least they didn't this past week, it was hurt, and they need someone else to step up to be able to make plays. That ostensibly was going to be Jared Cook, but we haven't seen any evidence of that thus far this year. Hopefully that changes.
Talking Saints football with Ken Trahan on 103.7 The Game. We'll switch it over to Dallas. You mentioned the Cowboys coming to town. Saints are underdogs. With Dak Prescott, I get a little confused sometimes with him. Is he more the guy that was a phenom as a rookie, what he is so far, three games this season, or maybe the years in between? How do you grade him out, and how do you think the Saints match up with that offense?
Well, he's played a lot better, obviously, thus far this year. He's a very likable, intelligent, smart young man who's played well within the confines of his offense, but he's got more weapons now. Of course, he has Amari Cooper for a whole year. Gallup's a good player. Got Jason Witten back, where Zeke Elliott's back in the fold, and so he's got a lot of toys to play with there, which really helps him. And their offensive line, I think that's the other element that really hasn't been discussed. They finally got all their guys together, and when their offensive line's intact, they're pretty good. Look, they haven't played anybody thus far this year, but that does not diminish the fact that they're a good football team. I give them a lot of credit, and I give them the ability to beat many people, most people, on a given Sunday because of the team they have. They got speed on defense, and as I just mentioned, they're good offensively. So it's a good football team, and it was going to be tough for the Saints with Drew Brees, although if Brees was healthy, I suspect this would be a ticket game, if not a slight favoritism to the Saints at home. But the Saints had something for them, too, after last year. Look, the Saints were playing great going into that game, and they did absolutely nothing. And really, their offense got exposed, and a lot of people felt like they gave everybody else a blueprint for how to play their offense the rest of the way. So this will be a telltale game on many fronts to determine whether the Saints are genuine contenders, whether they can mitigate the absence of Drew Brees, and whether or not they can find another weapon offensively, because they've got to find somebody else. Right now, they're a lesser team offensively, not just because of Drew Brees being out, but because Ted Ginn hasn't put up the numbers yet this year. Jared Cook hasn't done anything, really. And they don't have Ingram, and they don't have Smith. So they've got to find another weapon or two to be able to make plays. It can't just be on the quarterback.
Ken, how would you put into words what this matchup against the Cowboys, time in and time out, means to Sean Payton?
Well, it's always an intriguing game because, you know, the rumors about Payton and Dallas never stopped for like 10 years now. It's not happening. Payton just signed another 5-year extension. But that was always something, and maybe it was a leverage point for Coach Payton as well, but there was always that tie because of Payton having been in Dallas previously and his relationship with Jerry Jones. So there's always going to be that tie that binds. There's always going to be that friendly competition. There was the time where, you know, the leaving the wine for Jones that Payton did. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go between it. And, of course, the rivalry of the fan bases. Saints fans don't like the Cowboys, okay? And it probably runs the other way, too, because, as you know, in Louisiana, you guys are located in southwest Louisiana, and, you know, Houston would be not too far from you, but then you get to northwestern Louisiana, and a lot of people up in the Shreveport-Bossier area are split between allegiances between the Saints and the Cowboys. So it really is a border war. There's a lot to be said about the fact that both teams are legitimate NFC contenders. And so this game carries significant clout, and the fact that it's going to be nationally televised just accentuates that. And I think the country is waiting to see just what kind of team the New Orleans Saints have and whether they can rise up without Drew Brees. I said before the season started that if they got through these first four games, a very tough schedule, 3-1, they'd be on their way. If they got through 2-2, they'd be okay. Well, that's what they're at worst they're going to be. And if they got through 1-3, they were in trouble. That's not going to happen. So that was a big win in Seattle. It really was, in the grand scheme of things, a huge victory for New Orleans.
Get you out of here with a question about the defense for Dennis Allen. How do they hold down the fort until Sheldon Rankins comes back? And we know that would make a pretty darn good defensive line even better.
Yeah, Rankins is not that far away, for all accounts. Just talking to people that I know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's not this game, but the next game or within the next 3 weeks, based on what I've been able to derive from conversations with people. So obviously that's coming. David Onyemata is pretty solid, and he helped when he returned. Malcolm Brown's been okay. And then, of course, on the outside, I thought Marcus Davenport had his best game as a Saint last week. The numbers won't show it, but he just disrupted play after play after play in Seattle. Thought did an outstanding job. Trey Hendrickson's been really good from the get-go, and Cam Jordan's Cam Jordan. He's real good. You know, linebacker spot now, you're without Alex Anzalone. Pretty much count him out. Kiko Alonso has to take some snaps. He is a veteran player in the league. He's more of a run player, obviously. But then in most downs anyway, they're not going with three linebackers. They're going with two linebackers in the nickel package. So that's a little bit overstated in terms of being worried about having three backers on the field. It doesn't happen much anyway. And then in the secondary, the concern is obvious, and they've got to do a better job overall. And it's not just the cover corners. It's a safety position as well. Von Bell, I think, has been their most consistent player in the secondary thus far. He's done a good job. But Marcus Williams has made plays, and then he's not made plays, and there's a consistency issue there. And then, of course, Lattimore has been targeted a lot more than we expected this early on, and he's obviously had a mixed bag of tricks to this point. And then Eli Apple made a huge play in the game this past Sunday and played better, but that's been a little bit of a mixed bag too. But he's fine. I think maybe the biggest concern of the whole bunch would be P.J. Williams. P.J. Williams is a really best tackler in the secondary, and he's good in the slot and good within 10, 15 yards of the line of scrimmage. But you don't want to get him out in space, covering guys down the field. You remember there was one play in the game on Sunday where, fortunately, DeMario Davis blitzed and had great pressure on Wilson, and he missed a wide-open receiver in the end zone that had beaten Williams because of the pressure. So, look, do they have to do a better job covering? Yes. Will a pass rush help mitigate that? Absolutely.
Ken, for our Saints fans listening that are coming in your direction for the game Sunday night, let them know when the Hall of Fame Museum's open and any special guests you've got coming.
Yeah, of course, we're always open 2 hours prior to game time. The museum's located at Gate B, as in boy, on the plaza level of the Superdome. We open right when the gates open, so people can come in if they have a ticket to the game on game day. It's free on game day, and we'll have a former New Orleans Saint, former LSU star Randall Gay, will be appearing at the museum from 5 to 6:30 on Sunday prior to the game, signing autographs, taking pictures. So it'd be great to have Blue there as well. Of course, that's his nickname, and obviously he was part of that Super Bowl championship team in 2009. So we look forward to having Randall there, and we have a prominent former player appearing prior to every game from 2 hours prior to game time to about 45 minutes prior to game time.
Randall Blue Gay. That'll be fun. Ken, this was too. Thanks for the time today.
All right, Ben. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Love having him on. That's Ken Trahan, owner, CEO, CrescentCitySports.com. How about a quick thought? And I'm just going to dovetail a little bit off of one thing he said there. I asked him about what this game and this matchup means to Sean Payton. And at some point there he mentioned perhaps there's a leverage point for Payton to continue to torque some money. And as we saw about, I don't know, a week and a few days ago, more years out of the Saints. Not that there's anything wrong with that at all. It's what his agent should be doing. And it occurred to me, is Sean Payton to the Cowboys as Les Miles is, and especially was, to Michigan? I don't know that it's exactly apples to apples, but it's fascinating because there's no question that Miles well, got a lot of mileage out of the connection to Michigan and the flirtation. Difference being, I feel pretty certain, especially during the dalliance in 2007, in the midst of leading a damn strong LSU football team, I feel pretty certain that the miles to Michigan innuendo and the Kirk Herbstreit report were pretty darn true until they weren't, if you know what I mean. I don't think Peyton ever was or is really considering going to the Dallas Cowboys, but just a little food for thought. Speaking of food, I'm seeing a lot of it delivered here. St. Thomas More fans starting to show up at Pete's on Johnston, enjoying the chips with the queso and plenty more. Come out and join us if you get a chance. It'll be STM from 6 to 7. All Cougars, their prep power hour here at Pete's. We'll be right back in with more of our program. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
20 minutes after 5 o'clock, right back out to Pete's on Johnston. Going to do our best in this segment to let you hear from Ed Ogeron. He's meeting with the media as we speak. Hey, Clint Domingue is just good like that. So as we can get you some up-to-the-minute sound, we will do that, but I can give you some updates that are also up-to-the-minute. That would suffice, right? We've been talking a lot today about some of the fresh injuries on this LSU football team. Terrace Marshall out, Michael Divinity out, probably each for at least 2 weeks, maybe a little longer for Marshall, and lost in the shuffle of our conversation, it's the return of Ed Ingram and Ed Ogeron earlier today saying, look, Ingram looks in game shape. He's lost weight. He's working out. Coach O said, I don't see any problems. But he did make it clear that the big man from the state of Texas, Ed Ingram, hasn't played since 2017. Yeah, he's going to play against Utah State, but Ogeron was also clear about another thing. Adrian McGee remains the Tigers' starting left guard, and Ingram will only start over him if, in fact, he can beat him out for the position. And here we go. This is how good Clint is. I don't need to tell you about it. I can let you hear it exactly. So here's the exact sound from Ed Ogeron. Ingram has to beat out McGee to take back over his starting left guard role.
Could be. He has to beat him out, though. He has to beat him out. Right now, McGee is on the starting spot, and Ed's on second team, and let's see if he beats him out. Now, if he does beat him out, it's probably going to happen. As we know, Ed's a really good player, so is Adrian. We can use Adrian as a utility guy, right tackle, right guard, left tackle. He can play anywhere.
I like that part, kind of buried in at the end there. I'm sure that you heard that. If he beats him out, which I'm sure that he will, so it's being anticipated. Does it happen for Utah State? Probably not. Does it happen for Florida? I'd bet you a few dollars that that is the case. How about more from Ed Ogeron? I mentioned at the top of this set, Terrace Marshall out, had surgery Sunday for a stress fracture in his left foot. Might be 3 to 4 weeks, maybe a little bit more, but Ogeron here says that they've got one player and filed this under as expected, who'll be moving positions to help fill the void.
Yeah, you know, we'll move Stephon outside, let him play, and I think that'll be something that'll be good for Stephon, it'll be good for our team. Our tight ends have played well. I think Stephon will step in there and play a big role. I do believe those other guys are going to step it up. I think we will be fine.
Yeah, they've got some other weapons, including Thaddeus Moss at tight end. I saw this move coming. I think everyone did, and I think it's a pretty darn good one. So Sullivan back to the outside. I just wouldn't discount Racy McMath. Both of them have an opportunity at this point to backfill for the injured Terrace Marshall Jr. Let's get a couple of clips. Again, these are fresh as of the last 12 to 15 minutes from Ed Ogeron meeting with the media in Baton Rouge, and a huge topic of discussion around sports restaurants and bars, kind of like the one I'm at right now at Pete's on Johnston. huge topic of discussion is working on tackling. How do you get better at it? Coach O was asked that moments ago. Here's how he responded.
Tackling. Gap fits. You know, the first one was just a gap fit. Two of the big runs on a gap fit. Now, we lost the A-gap one time. We lost the B-gap the other time. And the next thing was technique on tackling. And it wasn't a matter of effort. It wasn't a matter of want to. It was a matter of fundamentals, technique, footwork, tracking, where we're going to go in the tackles. We studied 18 missed tackles yesterday, myself.
I wonder how many missed tackles the Tigers had total in a ball game. Said that they studied 18 there. I'd be curious to know what a total number is, not just for LSU, but maybe even what an average number in a game from around college football is. That would be intriguing, Clint. You've now got an assignment. But before you scamper off to that one, here's another one. Ed Ogeron gave an opening statement. So I guess here's the state of affairs. Tigers, top four team in the country, undefeated. In the midst of their bye week, here's how Ed O introduced his presser this afternoon.
All right, today was Tell the Truth Monday on Tuesday. We watched the tape. We talked about the things that we did well. There's a lot of things we did well. Talk about the things that we must and will improve. The team was in good spirits. We had a very light workout today. And tomorrow we're going to go and pass. Thursday we're going to be in helmets only. And the guys are going to have the weekend off. This week we want to make sure that we're catching up on our academics. We're catching up on our rest. I want our guys to be fresh starting for Utah State next week.
How about a few more tidbits? Ed Ogeron, as we speak, still addressing the media. I'll give some credit here. God bless Twitter for moments like this. James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine, reporting that LSU will experiment with Christian Fulton playing the nickel in this game versus Utah State and Cordell Flott on an island outside. I like that. And it backs up what I told Hunt Palmer on Thursday when he joined us. No nickel for Derek Stingley Jr. He came on Shay Dixon and I's Rest in Peace recruiting show that we had last year on the trail. And he answered my question very succinctly. If I said he might play some nickel at LSU, I'm an outside corner. Indeed he is. But Christian Fulton, according to Ed Ogeron moments ago, might see some time on the inside this week. Rashard Lawrence, doubtful to play against Utah State. Tigers have already ruled out Glenn Logan for the ball game. And Ed Ogeron continued when talking about the Aggies offense, saying they're going to be the fastest the Tigers have played under Ed Ogeron, period. Ogeron went as far as to say he thinks they play even faster than LSU does now. That certainly is a mouthful and a lot of, I think, praise to be heaped on the opponent coming over from the Mountain West Conference. And if you want a simulation of the Wild Wild West here in the Deep South, well, saddle up, Acadiana, because the Angola Prison Rodeo is coming back, and 103.7 The Game wants to give you a family four-pack of tickets to what is every single year the wildest show in the South. It's free and easy to enter. Just text the word Angola, A-N-G-O-L-A. Text Angola to 68683. Do it right now for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to the 2019 Angola Prison Rodeo. Halfway through with our program today, but I get the sincere impression it's about to kick up a notch and we're going to have a wild show here at Pete's on Johnston within the next hour and a half. Clint and I will throw some shade on the other side of this break. We'll talk a little Raging Cajuns before UL's trip to Georgia Southern this Saturday. All that to end our 5 o'clock hour. And then from 6 to 7, Jim Hightower and the STM Cougars invade Pete's on Johnston for their Prep Power Hour. We've got some Cougars fans that are already here. Come out and join us. Join them if you get a chance. We'll be celebrating all the way until 7 o'clock. But we got a little more. B2BS, that's Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back in on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back at it, still having a blast at Pete's on Johnston. Clint, you know we're going to throw shade. It's just something we do at half past the 5 o'clock hour on the regular. but I do want to update our sink or swim question of the day. I asked you to rank the top three teams in the NFL today. No contingencies, no when somebody is healthy, no when the schedule gets easier, none of that BS. Just who's up there today? And we've got some more responses on Facebook. In fact, some pretty lively debates as well. But let's give a shout-out. Troy H. going Pats 1, Rams 2, Chiefs 3. He said the Packers and Saints are close. For him, he can't put the Cowboys in there yet because they played three of the worst-ranked teams in the NFL. I'm right there with him. And we've got another. Robert D. comes in and says, and the Pats haven't. Well, yeah, they kind of have. The Pats played Pittsburgh. Yes, Roethlisberger was healthy, but boy, were they awfully bad still at that juncture. Miami, and this weekend, the Jets. So that's a fair point. And then Troy and Robert go on for a couple of paragraphs. So I'll let you go down the rabbit hole there on Facebook because I've got somewhere else to go. Got to tell you about who throws the best shade in town. You know it's Patio Center, but how about a little change of pace, Clint? Before we launch into me reminding everyone about Patio Center and all the great things they do in Acadiana, before we play the sound, we throw the shade, we've got an update from yesterday. I want you to share it with everybody because Nelson Agholor of the Philadelphia Eagles took an opportunity to maybe be a little salty and to maybe come out and, you know, get a little aggressive on Facebook. He took an opportunity where shade was thrown at him, and he handled it with tremendous class. And so share it with our listeners because this is pretty good stuff, and Agholor didn't drop anything here.
He definitely did not drop anything, Ben. He actually handled it the best way possible. This is not long after he went off air conveniently. He comes out on Twitter saying, thank you for being a hero in the community to the tweet, courtesy of the Four Letter Network. Him being a little petty, and of course, if you listened to yesterday's show, you know what we're talking about. But he said, thank you for being a hero in the community and would like to invite you and your family to the next home game, which is just some really cool stuff.
All right, for those that don't know what we're talking about, that weren't listening this time yesterday, a local firefighter in Philly was able to rescue children from a building that was starting to catch on fire. And quite literally, he was at the bottom of a ladder and babies and children were being thrown to him. And at some point he said, what, am I going to drop them? I'm not Nelson Agholor. It was an awesome burn, and it was great shade thrown. Agholor, well done with the response. And now I get to tell you one of my favorite things to tell you every day, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the inventory. You're going to love it, especially the retractable shades and screens. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. That's a beautiful thing for life in 2019. Collectively, the pros at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game. And all it takes to start, a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Our boy Clint taking center stage for shade today. He gives a little post-op in reaction to yesterday with Nelson Agholor and the City of Brotherly Love. How about Will Wade, what he had to say at a presser earlier this week in the aftermath of the mothership announcing that LSU, Utah State, October 5 would be an 11 a.m. kickoff. Wade was asked his thoughts on that subject by the media, and then as Clint will let you know here, he dished out some shade to the media.
He dished it out, and it was amazing. I got to kind of throw it out right out the gate. Here's Will Wade talking about 11 a.m. kickoffs, also talking a little bit about the Vandy game.
We didn't get to enjoy it too much because of the 11 a.m. kickoff. Guess we got another 11 a.m., right? I'm sure everybody's thrilled about that. I won't comment on that. Media is, y'all get to go home early. Get your free food and go home.
That isn't bad. Get your free food and then go home. Clint, am I mistaken, or is there another tweet that kind of even follows up on the shady goodness from Will Wade?
Oh, there's definitely some shady goodness, and if you've heard Will Wade talk about it in the past, he actually has one thing in particular, an acronym he has for the media, and it is Mooch Every Day in Abundance. And now I'm trying to dig around in my archives to find him saying that outright, because that is absolutely phenomenal.
I'm going to take it by your silence that you haven't found that out right. So why don't we just end this and head toward our final break of the hour.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
You caught me with a fast one there. I thought you were about to actually play the sound, and then you just stopped talking. But that's okay. We got it, and it's all good. Now, Clint, are you someone that would cover sporting events if there weren't live food there? Because this could be a lively discussion. Your thoughts?
You know, I definitely probably would. Maybe not necessarily a football game or a baseball game, but definitely if it were a basketball game, I'd be okay with it because you know they could wind up going about 2 hours. If it's a football game, especially now, those games can wind up going 4 hours. And baseball, you never know how long some of those can go. So I definitely would, but it would depend on the sport.
I never plan on having to get food, right? When I'm covering a sporting event, when I'm calling a game, I never plan on having to have it. But it's nice, and it's appreciated, and it's part of the reason. I'm going to say this in front of STM Cougar fans that are filing in, but it's part of the reason I love calling games at Turlings Catholic. It's a bomb press box, number one. But two, the food is just phenomenal. And Mike Boyer knows my feelings on the subject because I tell him all the time. And so, yes, it's nice when you can count on having not just food, but really good food and a lot of it. But I got to tell you, brother, I lived on the other side this past weekend in Oak Grove, and I kind of knew it would be this way. So this isn't any post shade, just following up on the topic, right? Blaine and I were calling the game from the visitor's press box, which, as it would imply, is on the same side of the field as the visitor's sideline. So there was no food there. And yet, we could see them all the way across the field enjoying delicious pizza and all kind of food in the palatial home press box. And so that's a word to the wise right there. If you're, especially in the high school football ranks, if you're covered a game and you're wondering where the food is, it is not on the visitor's side. It will not be in the visitor's press box. If you want to make a journey to the other side, maybe you have to put on like a different color shirt. I don't know that I was going to be let in with that Karen Crow C invited in and fed. Then again, I didn't ask, so I don't want to offend our guest, who were quite nice otherwise from the north side of Lake Charles. But the media and free food, yeah, they typically go hand in hand. And these universities certainly know how their bread is buttered. The pun there, you know that it's intended. And we do have a number of Cougars fans that are starting to pile in here. In fact, offensive coordinator Shane Savoy just walked into the building. So you want to be a part of the Cougars run and their prep power hour. They'll be with us from 6 until 7 live on the mic. Our current schedule of events. Head coach, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Jim Hightower should be sitting with me live at 6. I believe that Danny Jones and David LeBlanc are going to be with me at 6:15. And then after at 6:30, I'll start to dive into Shane Savoy, some of the offensive and defensive elder statesmen and standouts for the STM Cougars, top-rated team in Class 4A, and a heck of a test coming to town this week as STM will play host to Neville. Awfully excited about that ball game. Excited to have the Cougars as well in about 17 or 18 minutes. All right, quick break, and we end the 5 o'clock hour talking Raging Cajuns football. So fans of the Vermilion and White, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back at it one final time in the 5 o'clock hour. Yeah, we're still having a blast live at Pete's on Johnston. Cougar Nation has been filing in. They continue to do so. Jim Hightower and the STM Cougars will be with us for their prep power hour. That is coming up within the next 10 to 12 minutes. Yours truly awfully excited about that. A team that is highly regarded, not just in Class 4A, but across the state. And they'll have a big opportunity this Friday, the following Friday, to take on two of the best the state has known, certainly in the last decade, if not longer. It'll be Neville heading to STM this Friday, Catholic Baton Rouge. I know a thing or two about the Bears. They'll be coming to Lafayette a week from Friday. But enough of that for now. Clint, you and I, we've been itching to talk some Raging Cajuns and really not look past this Saturday, late afternoon's game, but dive into it. And you know better than most, that's been a challenge for me because all I'm wanting to do is jump ahead to that Wednesday, October 9 game with App State coming to town. We know the Mountaineers just beat UNC, so help me out a little bit here. Before we dive, I guess, head first into the deep end and start discussing the ins and outs of this particular game, Cajuns at Georgia Southern, convince me that I need to be in the moment and be present. I can't completely look forward, can I?
You can't completely look forward, and I think a lot of it has to do with something that you and I talked about. I believe this was last Wednesday when we were kind of sort of looking ahead to that Georgia Southern game when talking about what's going to go on with Ohio and Georgia Southern, and you kind of said it was probably going to be a split. And I agreed with you largely because of the fact of what's going on in this game right here. Look back to last year's game against Coastal Carolina, who was running the triple option and running it with great effectiveness. And mind you, they've been doing more of the same this year when you look at Coastal Carolina. Georgia Southern, they're still the same old song and dance in terms of the triple option. Nothing's really changed from the last couple of years. And now maybe Shai Wirtz will be ready to go on Saturday. I saw this earlier. So that could wind up being something to kind of throw a little wrench into things. It's all about what you can do in Statesboro and be able to stop that offense, that high-powered triple option offense that has given the Cajuns a good bit of trouble the last couple seasons.
Yeah, Eagles might be getting healthy at the right time for them, perhaps the wrong time for the Cajuns. But I guess for the purposes of context, final game in September, five straight weeks. The Cajuns have been playing technically. The first one came in the month of August on Labor Day weekend. But UL, 3-1 and three straight wins after a relative close call with Mississippi State. Georgia Southern is 1-2, but don't let that fool you. Yes, the lone win was at home versus lowly Maine. That score was 26-18. How about the other two sides of that, Clint? We know about the 55-3 game at LSU, but the last contest for Georgia Southern, a 35-32 nail-biter as Georgia Southern lost at Minnesota. They've now played at two Power 5 teams. They played one wildly competitive game. The other, they fell flat against LSU when the Tigers were ready to roll in the season opener. So this Georgia Southern team, you're right. I shouldn't. Nobody should take them lightly. The opportunity ahead of the Cajuns is great if they get this one. But what's it going to take to get there? It's more than just defending against the triple option. How can the Cajuns maybe impact this game with the way they play on offense?
I think the biggest thing you have to do is really kind of establish yourself as being a team that's willing to play a little bit more balanced football. They're going in there. Look at all the film that's out there over the last 4 weeks. What have we seen to be the impact part of this team, the position that we all know all too well how good it is, and that is the running back position. We know how good that core is, and trust me, that's going to be tough for any team to defend, but you see enough film, you see what they do, you can tell, oh, hey, we're going to try and attack this more often than not. If you're Georgia Southern, you're going to be focusing in on that run game, but you need to show them, especially early on, that you need to respect the passing game. And we've seen that over the last couple weeks, especially on the road in Ohio. I noticed quite a few really nice, dare I say, top 10 worthy catches, especially in that Ohio game early. That one-handed grab was nothing short of phenomenal. But there's a lot of guys out there that can wind up getting it done. You need to establish the passing game to make sure that they can respect you on both sides.
And, you know, why don't we let Billy Napier weigh in on the subject? He met with the media within the last 24 to 27 hours, and he discussed exactly what you just brought up. Shai Wirtz expecting now to start for Georgia Southern. And Billy Napier addressed that with his comments here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we anticipate the starter playing, you know, but I'm very impressed with the redshirt freshman. The rookies play well for him. He's a very explosive player. And presents kind of the same problems. Both these guys are really good players. I mean, and I think that they create some of the same issues.
So you want to step up and attack that triple option. You need all hands on deck defensively. Not sure that will be the case. Clint mentioned it on yesterday's program. Chauncey Manack went out. Andre Jones and company stepped up and filled a void. According to Napier here, might have to do it again. No real update at this moment on Manack.
His situation is still being evaluated, exactly where he's going to be. We're going to have more of an update Wednesday when we get off the field relative to our entire team and where we're at from an injury standpoint. But we've got a handful of players that will be kind of day-to-day that we'll evaluate throughout the week. We'll give you that exact information on Wednesday.
And, hey, relative to 500, the Cage is already two games above it. They can crawl to three games over the Mendoza line with a win here. And then that sets up a very intriguing October. Again, UL right now at 3-1, and they're 3.5-point favorites going on the road to Statesboro. Clint, we've touched on it. You got to be ready for that triple option offense. I think that you could do a lot of things, mostly on the ground, but you have to kind of supplement that through the air to keep Georgia Southern off the field. I believe this is a ball game where time of possession could actually be pretty darn important. Yes, UL has an opportunity to score quickly. If you can, you should. It's like the whole LSU thing we keep discussing. No, they shouldn't go slower on offense. And no, they shouldn't accommodate the defense. But in a game like this, against Georgia Southern's triple option attack, I think it's okay if your guys try to, you know, stretch things out when it applies. And when your run game just takes over and is that dominant. So it's been a lot of fun watching the Cages this season. I know a lot of people will be right here where I'm at this Saturday, late afternoon, 5 p.m. kickoff at Central Time, 5 p.m. from Statesboro, Georgia. They'll have a huge watch party here at Pete's. I'm going to try to be in that number myself. But one thing I do know, we've had awfully big numbers coming through the turnstiles here the last few Tuesdays. Southside brought 112 people, players, cheerleaders, coaches, parents, fans, 117 a week ago on a Tuesday night from Dane Chaponche and the Turnlings Catholic Rebels. I'm excited for SDM to take center stage. It is their prep power hour on the other side of this break. So we got to thank the one and only Shea Dixon. He's like a great versatile hitter. You can move him around in the lineup. Today we needed him at 4:15. As always, he just collected hits. Thank you to Shea D. Ken Trahan slash Trahan at straight up 5 o'clock to begin this hour. His thoughts on the New Orleans Saints and a lot of fun in between. But right about now, how about we hit an hour break? And then school is in session. STM on the verge of one of the home team's biggest games in a long time. With Neville coming to town, we're going to discuss all of that and more when we return. And Bumper to Bumper Sports, we're going to switch into prep power hour mode. As always, live from Pete's on Johnston and only on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now
let's get started.
And welcome to Pete's on Johnston. It's time for our prep power hour. The STM Cougars taking center stage. Glad to have everyone here on 1037 The Game. Ben Love and a lot of Cougars fans, players, and head coach Jim Hightower right out of the chute. Coach, we're up over 55 people just to start. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. A lot of community support from the Cougars. There always is.
Always, always. We've got a great fan support, great fan base. We're proud to represent them.
3-0 to begin the season. Top team in Class 4A and Neville coming to town this week. How do you summarize the way this thing has started for your Cougars?
It's been a great start. We've had some exciting ball games. Going down and opening at Holy Cross in Yeoman Stadium, that was a great opener against a really solid 5A football team from the Catholic League. I thought that was a great outing, and we answered the call. It was give and take on both sides, but in the third and fourth quarters, we kind of took care of the action, and really pleased with that start for the season. And then the next week, we got to play against Barb, another 5A program that's used to being at the top of their district and going into playoffs. And Had a really explosive game against Barb, really prodded out of it. And then last week we've had this traditional game with Plaquemine, and again, you know, we scored on defense, we scored on special teams. The offense couldn't be stopped. It was a real dominant performance by the Cougars. And so, you know, we've kind of had our way with the early part of the season, but Neville, that's stepping up in class. You know, that's going to be a different level of competition. Here's a game that could be played in December as a state championship game. That's the caliber of the Neville Tigers, you know. They've got probably as storied a tradition as the Cougars do, you know, except they've been doing it about twice as long, you know. We've got maybe sons playing. I don't know if we're quite to the grandsons yet, but I'm sure they've got the great-great-grandsons that are playing for Neville Tigers. You know, they're probably – I know they're in the top five for winningest programs in the state of Louisiana all time. I think they've got over 600 victories in their history. Real storied program. Mickey McCarty has been at Neville as long as I've been at St. Thomas More. He does a great job. Got a great staff, great tradition. It's going to be a fantastic ball game.
Excited to preview over the next hour. Cougars and Tigers. For onlookers that would think, okay, it's just plugging and play for you, Shane Savoy, on this offense, right? You've got the same quarterback, couple of the same receivers. It's never that simple, right? How do you make this group be as special as they can be?
Well, we're going to keep working, trying to get that timing and that chemistry down, and it's getting closer every week, you know. It really has to be a sense of feel, you know, that the receivers, quarterbacks, the line have for each other, you know, and then being able to make sure we're all on the same page as far as blocking schemes and, you know, who's going to do what if the defense does this. So it's all a lot of reactions, a lot of knowledge, and I think that's really going to come into play this week because Neville shows so many different looks on offense. They show a lot of looks. On defense, they show a lot of looks. They do a great job with special teams. So it's going to come down to those small things and who's able to make the adjustments and be the smartest on the field. I think that's probably going to be the difference in the ballgame.
Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Jim Hightower joining us live at Pete's on Johnston. Your defense this year, I don't want to say pleasant surprise because many thought that they would be good. How have they taken maybe a step forward even from the group last year that went to the Dome?
Well, we came back with a lot of starting experience and a lot of playing experience, so we were expecting our defense to be good. I don't know if we were expecting to be quite as good as they've been so far, though. They've been dominant, and we've created a lot of turnovers. You know, we've given up a few third down plays. That's one thing I know, you know, the defensive staff is trying to get fixed, but, boy, it's hard not to be proud of what they've done so far.
Tell me about your quarterback. Caleb Holstein came in with a lot of expectations this season, already committed to Harvard. I know a lot of coaches love it when that gets out of the way and the kids just get to focus on their senior season. But how has he taken his game to a different level?
He's so much smarter, I think, than he was. You know, he knows the game. He knows where our guys are going to be or where they're supposed to be. He handles everything as a cool competitor. He's such a leader. You know, I'm just really proud of Caleb and what he's developed, how he's developed. Shane's done a great job helping him along in that path, and Caleb just does a fine job as a complete quarterback. He knows the game mentally and physically. He's able to deliver the ball where it needs to go. He's cool under pressure. He shares everything with his teammates. He's you know, I don't know how he could do better a job than what he's been doing.
I know when healthy that Noah Frederick is going to be lining up next to him a lot. I saw Noah earlier. I think he was somewhere testing out the ankle a little bit, not too strenuously. But how would that change this offense?
Well, you know, it's given some other guys opportunity, you know, and Tobin Tebbino has kind of stepped in as the Noah 2, you know, the Noah version 2. And they've had a similar running style, so we lost a little experience. But, you know, Tobin's done a fine job. Cameron Renthrop has stepped in and, you know, taken up some of the slack there. So, you know, that's what you have to have on a football team. You know, when players go down, somebody else has to step up. You know, we lost our starting tight end prior to the start of the season. And, you know, Luke has been on the mend. I think he's getting real close to stepping back in and taking over some of some of that responsibility. But, you know, that opened up an opportunity for David Christie to step in and do the job, and he's done a fine job. So, you know, when we get those guys back, we'll be that much stronger because now we've got, you know, second-line players that have been through the wars and they're ready to go. So, you know, I'm really excited about what we can do with two tight ends possibly and, you know, some other options that are now going to be open to us.
It's Neville this week, Catholic Baton Rouge next week, both at home in Cougar Stadium. Let's go back to Neville. And I think, for me, one of the most eye-popping results of this season so far, Neville 28, U-High nothing in North Louisiana. That says all you need to know that a good opponent's coming to town.
Absolutely.
Where are they strongest?
They're kind of like us, and I think they're strong everywhere. You know, they're just balanced. They're very good, and they're very good on offense, defense, special teams. And they're well coached. They don't make mistakes. You know, you're going to have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. So I expect a tough four-quarter game. And, you know, it's going to be a thriller, I think.
The smoke machine, I'm told, was working overtime in the pregame. It was phenomenal. The entrance, the atmosphere against Plaquemine, out of this world. I mean, for our listeners, tell them about that home field advantage. And as long as you've been doing it, it's still got to be a thrill when you come out of that ramp.
Oh, absolutely. We love playing at home. We love representing the school out there on our home turf. And, you know, our support, you know, walking through the Cougar Walk out to get to the field and the tailgating that's going on. You know, there's always a lot of excitement when we're playing at home at St. Thomas Memorial. So we're really looking forward to having Neville come and see that. See what our atmosphere is like. I know they've got a great atmosphere up there, so we're kind of looking forward to that trip a year away, but, you know, we're awfully glad that this one's at home.
What's the capacity? Remind me of Cougar Stadium.
We can probably go about 7,000 or something, I would guess.
So you're telling me we're squeezing 7,000 in on Friday night.
Well, we've got standing room, too, now.
Maybe 8,000. We'll see, but the players love that. The Cougars, the Tigers, a huge one at home. Coach, thanks for doing this. Best of luck this Friday and the rest of the season. Look forward to catching up soon.
Glad to, Ben. Thank you.
Jim Hightower, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, head coach of the STM Cougars. I think the cheerleaders have walked in. We're going to have to get a cheer at some point tonight. On the other side, I don't know that anybody should cheer for this, but Danny Jones will join me. We'll balance that out. David LeBlanc will be with me as well. Later in the program, Shane Savoie and some of these players too. So don't go anywhere. We're about to go over 90 people here supporting the STM Cougars. They're chasing 117 from a week ago. We'll be right back. This is the Cougars Prep Power Hour live at Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Cougars now have it second and 15. Holstein fakes to the near side, rolls to the far side, has his receiver, and that's Arsenault. He's got it at the 10, the 5, touchdown, St. Thomas More. And Carter Arsenault was wide open from 30 yards out.
Right back into Pete's on Johnston. More of the STM Prep Power Hour. Glad you're with us on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, and I'll be joined for the next few moments by Danny Jones. You just heard him as we came in, the voice of the Cougars, and then David LeBlanc, strength and conditioning coordinator and O-line coach. Coach LeBlanc, you okay with that call we just heard there? It sounded like it was Holstein to Arsenault, another six on the board.
I'd rather run, but we're good with that.
Spoken like a true offensive line coach.
Danny, remind me, the first year that you started doing this, how long have you been calling Cougars football?
Since 2002, actually the last time we played Neville.
How'd that game go? That was actually my senior year of high school. That's how far back we're getting.
We were 17-0. Bobby Lane was the quarterback for Neville. And we lost a lead of 17, and Neville went on. That was a quarterfinal game in the 4A matchup, and Neville went on. I don't remember how they did.
21-17.
Yeah. And they advanced to the state semifinal. So hopefully a different outcome this Friday night as the Cougars take on Neville at Cougar Stadium.
I want to offer this up for both of you, but this matchup this week got me to thinking about the most memorable home games in recent years at Cougar Stadium. Each of your takes.
Definitely 2004 versus Northside semifinal game, and the 2010 game versus Acadiana semifinal game also. Both losses, both devastating, but I think in the top 10 games ever in Lafayette history, those two have to be up there.
2004 obviously was a great one. We had the lead at halftime, lost in double overtime to Keelan Williams and Northside 28-20, if I remember that correctly.
That's right.
Then the 2010, obviously, semifinal game against Acadiana was a great atmosphere. It wasn't the outcome any St. Thomas War fan wanted. But I think you have to put in there 2015 against Turlings, the state semifinals, which was punching the ticket for the first time ever to the state championship game for the St. Thomas War Cougars. And then equally 2016, the goal line stand against U High in the state semifinals to go to the state championship game was, you know, it's easy to point out playoff games. There's been some incredible atmospheres in regular season games, but obviously those are the first four that come to mind for me.
Turns out that U High program is about to go on a run as well, so an awfully important win. Joined now by Danny Jones and David LeBlanc at Pete's on Johnston. Coach, give me the scoop on your offensive line, how you're getting these guys together for what's a new season and a new run of the state title.
Well, I mean, these guys were kind of the question mark early, and I think they've answered all the questions. They're doing their job. They're protecting Caleb. We're averaging, you know, 5 or 6 yards a carry on the run game, and I think we're well balanced, and I think we can do, you know, we can keep the defense on their toes.
What have you seen so far that makes this year's offense not better or worse, just different than last year, Danny?
Well, I think you brought a whole new group of guys, wide receivers. Noah Frederick played a little bit, you know, got some playing time last year, but obviously he wasn't the feature back with Cryer. So you bring in a wide receiving core that's fairly new. You bring in an offensive line group that's fairly new. You have a running back that saw some playing time, but now he's the featured back in Noah Frederick. And then obviously you have Caleb Holstein that returns as your starter. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm probably going to say that last year's offense was the most prolific I've seen since I've done St. Thomas War Radio for 17 years. So it's hard to compare it. And Sam and I have done it after games each week, and it's not fair to compare it to last year because it's a different group. And last year just had so much continuity and cohesiveness between that group. But I see a wide receiver core that as a unit is probably one of the top, or probably the top in the area, if not one of the tops in the state. And slowly but surely you're starting to see the timing and the cohesiveness get together with Holstein as quarterback. And you're seeing an offensive line group that, like David said, was at the beginning of the season what some people said is a liability or something you got to look at. And I see through three games this offensive line unit really progress. And defensively, you know, the first week out, I thought we tackled one of the best week ones we've ever had. I thought our tackling was pretty good. Week two, maybe not as great, and I thought they got back to basics and the principles a week ago. And so defensively, a lot of experience on the defensive side of the ball. And I think special teams-wise, our kicking game from week one to week three, what D.C. Stimmons has done and the effort and the work he's put in over 3 weeks, I think from a month ago, our special teams is a lot more comfortable than we were or are now than we were a month ago.
I mean, we're talking about our offense, but our defense is leaps and bounds ahead where they were in week three from a year ago. Our defense this year, I told Coach Tidd in the coach's office during the Jamboree, I said, Coach Tidd, we are as good on defense as we were in week 7 or 8 last year as we are right now. So our defense is stout. Our defense has a little moxie, you know.
Some nastiness.
They're nasty. They're confident. And they give, in practice, they give our offense everything we can handle.
And if I think it's competitive on the field, it's competitive, I think, with this entire program and these fans right now. I'll give you a head count update. 96 that we've got in the building supporting Cougars football, right? And that's
we got
coaches,
players, your friends,
cheerleaders.
We need 22 more to beat those guys from
they're coming.
That other school.
The rest of the brigade is coming. They just had to maybe do some boards and some up-downs after practice, right? Sometimes that's how it goes.
Absolutely.
We're joined now by Danny Jones, and David LeBlanc from the coaching staff. Give me a little more on Neville, and I guess what you've come to know about these guys over the years. Coach, we'll go with you first, and I guess how they stack up this year compared to what we're used to from the Tigers.
Well, I mean, what we're used to is what they have this year. You know, they're solid. They are the most kind of consistent program. I'd put them up there with Notre Dame, John Curtis, STM, Acadiana. They're good every year. They have a quality program. They have a ton of coaches. They have 17 coaches on staff. I think they're in the top three of winning programs in the last decade. They have more wins than almost anybody in the state in the last decade. So they're a proud program. They do things the right way. Their head coach has been there forever, just like our coach, Jim Hightower, and they do things the right way. And they're going to bring a crowd, and it's going to be a great battle. It's the game of the week.
Danny, this is something that people like me and you can talk about in the media. These players and coaches won't. Wouldn't it be great if this could be a playoff game? I know that right now we're in a system where that's not possible, but I could dream, right? We can have this again in like 3 or 4 years, can't we?
Well, the hope is we come back together a lot quicker than that. I kind of went on a rant in our pregame show a week ago. But as I've said, you know, the way the system is now is, you know, a travesty to these young student-athletes. You know, so many people say, you know, now you have a state championship, and whether it's St. Thomas More in 16 or Eunice last year on the non-select side, to put an asterisk next to it. And I tell people all the time, do not hold against kids what adults are deciding are their rules. These kids are just lining up, playing the guys that are put up against their schedule and doing the playoff system as such. If they really want to get it right, the state of Louisiana is not big enough for 9 state champions. We're not big for 6 classifications. We need to go back to 5A. If you say they recruit, if you say they don't recruit, public schools recruit, private schools recruit, it happens everywhere. But because you might win and you get a taste of winning, be better. Don't just try to separate so you have a chance to win. Let everybody line up. But the problem is, until public schools, or until they don't have the majority, we're going to find ourselves in this situation. And don't hold it against student athletes and kids that are going out playing for the name on the front of the jersey that they got a state championship in a split. They didn't decide that. You as adults did, and they're having to be a part of that.
Fair enough. Coach, I want to get you involved. I know that it's Neville this week, Catholic of Baton Rouge after, and then you get back into 5-4-A play. So an early look at this year's district slate.
The district's always tough. You know, obviously, Karen Crow and Turlings, Westgate, formidable opponents. They're always going to bring their A game, especially against us. You know, it's always a tough district slate. And, you know, we're worried about this week, though. And then next week we're worried about Catholic, and next week we're worried about the next opponent. But, you know, district championships used to, you know, set the seeding for the playoffs, but now it's all even. So a non-district game is just as important as a district game as far as playoff seeding and PowerPoint.
That's a great point.
This Neville game is just as important as the Turlings game, or just as important as the Westgate game or the Karen Crow game. So every week is important now with the PowerPoints.
Is it ever a challenge to keep your guys down when you have an atmosphere like is expected this Friday night? The one after, probably the ones you've had the last 2 Fridays. Is that ever a challenge, or maybe they just get used to playing in these moments?
Well, credit to Coach Hightower. He always preaches a level mindset. You know, don't ever get too excited when you're up. Don't ever get too down and start pointing fingers when you're down. Just keep a level and do what your coach should do, and we'll be all right at the end.
You gave some time earlier talking about the defense, Danny. We got another moment or two in this segment. Who are some of the young men that have been leading on that side of the football?
Well, I think you look at your defensive line. You got Mr. Cannon, the ERAS O-10 Fighting Heart Award winner for St. Thomas More this year. And then, you know, they always say your linebacker crew, and Terry Tidwell only runs 2 linebackers, but they better be, you know, linebackers and, say, you know, defensive backs better be able to run as fast as you can and hit as fast as you can. But I think, you know, I put a lot of stock in our defensive backfield. You know,
absolutely.
What I mean? So many programs are going to the spread. I think people are absolutely crazy to throw or try and throw on Dominic Zephyrin. So they're going to try and throw to St. Cyr's side, and he had a pick 6 a week ago. You've got Josh Stevenson, you know, playing safety, roving around back there. They keep everything in front of them, and I think our defensive backfield is one of our strong suits. But, again, those linebacking, you know, that linebacking core, call it a 4-4-3 or a 4-2-5, whichever you may, technically a 4-2-5. But they've got speed to cover, and they're able to hit like linebackers also.
Our DBs are legit. I mean, they lock us down in practice, and I would like to think that we're a pretty explosive passing game, and they lock us down day in and day out in practice. So, you know, our DBs have a lot of experience coming back. That was a kind of a question mark last year, was our lack of experience in the D-backs. But, you know, Josh and Trahan and Dom and those guys coming back, they make us better every day on offense.
Coach, got about a minute left. Who won the LSU-Texas game a few weeks ago? Do you happen to recall?
That was definitely LSU.
Okay.
And Danny Jones was silent on Facebook for about a week after that. And if Texas would have won, I don't think he would have been that way.
My wife probably would have made me be that
right.
way.
Telling the truth. Ed Ogeron said tell the truth Monday. We'll tell it on Tuesday at Pete's. That's not bad.
Well, he lies about air conditioners, so we're good.
Well, oh, boy. Now it's time to get off
go.
The air.
Here we go.
We got a couple of truth tellers joining us on the other side, Shane Savoie and Lance Struther. So buckle up. We got more of the Cougars Prep Power Hour coming right back to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This is the Cougars Prep Power Hour. Having a lot of fun on 103.7 The Game, and we'll keep it rolling. A couple of coaches on the offensive side join me now. Offensive coordinator Shane Savoie back on the program, and Lance Struther coaching up those wideouts. Played the same position for the Cougars with us as well. Coaches, how are we tonight?
Doing great, Ben.
Doing
Thanks
good.
For having us.
Is it a little different at practice this week? Neville coming to town. You feel anything different in practice?
Yeah, I mean, there's more excitement in the, just because there's a big game coming up, but you would hope our kids would approach each practice week with the same mentality, just trying to get better. Looking at ourselves, what are the things that we can do better, especially this early in the season? You know, the goal is to be a better team on Friday than we were last Friday. Hopefully it'll be enough on this Friday to win the game, but there's a lot of stuff for us to look at ourselves at and get better.
With the system that you guys run and the distribution, I mean, you guys got to come to practice every day just licking their chops, right?
Yeah, our receivers are blessed at St. Thomas More for sure. I try to remind them that every once in a while. I made a reference recently to over a decade ago. I think we hit a total of 21 pass attempts against Opelousas many years ago. And I told our guys, maybe last week, I said, we celebrated. We couldn't believe we had 21 attempts.
And that was Mikey Matuk.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest passing game in a few years was against Opelousas that night.
So it's fun.
When I played at Catholic of Baton Rouge, receivers were stalk blockers and, like, exclusively stalk blockers. So these guys are doing something completely different. Give me a little insight into what makes Jack Best special, Coach, and only a junior, so talented, physically developed. How's he doing it?
Well, Jack has got a lot of God-given ability, and he works his butt off to maximize that God-given ability. I like for people to know, you know, the talented kids are really putting in the hours and putting in the extra work, and Jack is one of those guys. And Jack is one of those little brothers that got to see the art of receiver play done well by his older brother. I think he picked up some lessons there, developed some confidence early, and that confidence, I think, helps him. And he plays big. He's got a huge window. He takes a lot of pride in doing things the right way.
So you've been dialing him up now for Tiger Besh and then Jack. What's the difference? What are the similarities in the two?
Confidence would be the similarity. They both are pretty confident in their abilities. But uniquely different receivers. I still think Tiger was one of the most, if not the most, prolific wide receiver we've ever had at St. Thomas More. The things he could do were second to none. The things he can do in route, we still haven't had a guy be able to do some of the things he did in routes that were just uniquely special to him and his God-given ability. But Jack on the other side is a mismatch in every way, shape, or form, just from his size, his ability to go get the football, his ability to route run, which he is starting to develop even more and more. If he can learn how to run routes like his older brother, the sky will be the limit for this guy.
Shane Savoie, Lance Struther, joining us right now, offensive brain trust for the STM Cougars. Coach Savoie, I would ask you this as well. You told me this time last year, William Cryer, one of the best bell cow running backs that this program has had in a long time, maybe ever. How do you start to replace him, especially knowing that Noah Frederick's been injured for a couple weeks this season?
Well, I guess the tradition of our school has always been next man up, you know, and if you look, it seems like every year we're here sitting talking about the guy we're losing, and all of a sudden another name emerges, and we're just overly impressed with his abilities. And I think that's just a testament to our coaches on both sides of football, but I'm uniquely blessed. You talk about running back. Brock Prejean does such a great job with our running backs. It's not a coincidence that another guy is able to step up and fill the shoes of Cryer or Primo or just insert another name of a back of the pass. We've done a great job with that. And then it's a testament to the guys up front. You got to hear from David LeBlanc, Austin Como, who helps work with him. Our tight ends coach, Jacob Rodriguez, does a tremendous job there. And then you look outside, and from a wide receiver standpoint, I'm not sure you're going to find better coaching anywhere in the state. And that's in all levels. I know it sounds absurd, but when you see what our wide receiver coaches are doing, Coach Lance Struthers and David Starkovich, what they're doing out there with those guys, it's just impressive. And to see them develop and trust in those things, to answer your question, the reason the next guy steps up is they believe in the system, they believe in what they're being taught, and technique-wise, they're sound.
Before we move forward, I want to throw not just a bone, but a huge kudos to everybody here. We're now at 106 STM Cougars that are in the building. You hear the applause, and yet I know they're getting on the phone, they're texting, they're calling. They'll be at 118 before we know it. All right, Coach Struthers, I'll get back to you next. The challenges that Neville's defense provides and what your guys will have to do this Friday night to help the team get a victory.
Yeah, they're very impressive. And Coach LeBlanc mentioned this, but just as an overall team, watching film, you just see, you know, you see little things like guys in the secondary pointing to where the ball's going to go before it goes, you know, before the ball snapped, and then it goes there. So, you know they're in film. You know they're taking a lot of pride in it. Those in the secondary, their feet are excellent. They may not be the most intimidating single guy that we face, but collectively, they got a lot of talent. They're smart. They trust their system. They take some gambles. They have some risk reward in it. They'll be on some plays that we haven't seen DBs on because they're taking those risks. We have a lot of respect for them, but we also have a lot of confidence in what we do, and we feel like we've, you know, with Shane as the OC and our entire offensive staff with Coach Hightower, we feel like we have enough experience and ability to counter, you know, what we're seeing on film and then adapt in the game.
We keep talking about Neville and what they did shutting out U High last week, a shootout. They went 35-32 against Wichita Parish, so they're adept at playing a couple different styles. These Cougars really only know one style on offense, and we're talking now with a couple of guys that continue to make it happen. Coach Struthers, I'd ask you this as well. What is it like to play at a place and then coach there? How much does maybe that change what you put into it and how you put into it?
Well, St. Thomas More Cougars, it's just in my blood. I remember being a kid on the chain link fences in the late 80s and early 90s and watching my older sister play basketball and watching my older brother playing receiver at St. Thomas More. And just dreaming about my chance, you know. Those chain link fences were Clark Field. They weren't our home stadium, but the dream was set in place. And so, yeah, to be able to play there, and then God's plan for me to come back and my family being living Lafayette, and then just give back to young people what I felt like I received at that school. So many people invested in me athletically, spiritually, academically. It's a great privilege and blessing.
And how would you put it into words, Coach, about what these kids that are coming through these days, what they get out of the entire experience? And winning on the football field, obviously, it's just a part of it.
Well, you hope they're getting that. And in many cases right now, they don't realize it. What's been fun is being there for the amount of time that we've been there, Lance and I now for 16 years, seeing the kids come back 5, 10, 15 years now down the road, some of them with their families, and the lessons and the things we talked about and the things we preached in the perspective of football are now being applied to their lives. And you can see that in their family life and their spiritual life and their work life. All those things are being applied. And that's really the beauty of it. You know, I usually tell our kids each year, if at the end of this experience, all we've taught you to do is throw and catch or tackle or you know, block, have we really done you a service for where you're going to be 10, 15 years down the road? You know, the school has been blessed. We've had three guys go to the NFL. None of them have made enough money in the NFL to make a living off of it. They've all had to do something else. And in that way of life, the skills that we're really teaching on the football field are the things that they apply to life to make them successful. It's not a coincidence that if you know what you're doing, and you do it the right way, and you do it as hard as you can, you're successful in football and also in life and whatever avenue you try to focus in.
I would never ask you guys to look ahead, right, and talk Catholic Baton Rouge, St. Thomas More with me, but I will get you to look at that matchup in general and what it's been like over the years. My understanding is that it's dead even. Same amount of wins on one side of the basin as the other. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, that's a program I've always looked at and just been in awe of. You know, Catholic High, Baton Rouge, Catholic High, there's just a
you know, by the way, I get guff for saying Catholic of Baton Rouge. They say, come on, there's only one. I say, I work in Acadiana now, man. There's only so much I can do.
So it's always neat. And, you know, the series actually started out. We won the first four games. Two of them at our place, we were able to blow them out. But the two at their place were hard-fought games. And then, man, the last four have switched back to them. So, you know, over the summer, the kids, that's one of the games that we're focused on and one of the games we'd like to perform well in. But I think one of the things that Jim and our staff have done a great job of, it's about us. You know, it's about us performing the best we can. And if that's enough to win this week, then awesome. Next week, we need to be a little bit better than we were this week.
Anything to add, Coach?
I will affirm that it is a temptation to look ahead. But obviously, Neville is an unbelievable opponent. So our attention is fully on them. That being said, to echo what Shane said about our players, same as a coach. You know, we're very aware that Catholic has had our number the last 4 years. We got huge respect for them, their staff, the way they go about things. And I will be excited to flip film from hopefully a win versus Neville and then start breaking down some Catholic.
A couple teams that have been regulars in the Dome for the last couple of years, to be certain. Don't know where championships will be games will be played this year, but you would imagine, too, that have a chance to get back there this December. A lot of fun, guys. Enjoyed doing this. Thanks for hopping aboard.
Thank you.
Thanks
man.
So much.
Appreciate it.
And now we'll get them to volunteer some of the players as we'll finish up with the Cougars themselves. The players joining me next. This is their Prep Power Hour as we're live at Pete's on Johnston. And one final time, we'll come back in on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Welcome back in one final time. It is the St. Thomas More Cougars Prep Power Hour on the home of Cougars football, 1037 The Game. I got a couple of seniors with me now. We're going to introduce him, and then we'll give it up for him. Joining me inside of Pete's on Johnston, senior defensive end Cameron Cannon and senior O-lineman, returning all-district performer Nick Wolf. Guys, let's give it up for your teammates a little bit. With an introduction like that, guys, it's good to have you here. I want to start, Cameron, with you, and I'll ask the obvious question. What's it like playing for your dad and being coached up by your dad along the D-line?
It's not as difficult as people would think it would be. We don't take anything home. We leave everything on the field. We work well together, and it's never personal. It's strictly business.
To be named the Fighting Heart Award winner, tell our listeners here and listening all over Acadiana exactly what that means to you.
Oh, it was a huge honor. Since becoming a freshman here, I've always wanted to win that award. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to lead this team all the way to a state championship, and now I feel like I've been granted that opportunity.
Got to switch it over to the offensive line. Nick Wolf mentioned that you're a returning all-district performer. Remind our listeners of how you kind of got thrown into things right before the Jamboree last year.
I think right after Landon Burton got hurt with his hip flexor, I kind of stepped up at the center position and eventually led to my starting position on the S-Team Cougars.
Well, give me a little bit of how last year went for you and what you're looking forward to this season.
Last year was a good experience. It really helped me develop as a player and kind of learn everything. And then this year I'm really enjoying like making a new bond with all the guys and just getting new chemistry.
Nick, we'll stay with you. The Holy Cross game didn't start out as the offense wanted, but how did you guys regroup? Give me what that was like in the huddle, in the locker room, and then an explosion in the second half.
I guess it was an interesting, I mean, not everything goes as planned, but I think we, if, as long as we stay consistent and do our path, not go too high, too low, we're always going to stay with it.
Cameron, switching back over to you. People watch this LSU team now and say, well, the offense scores too fast. It puts the defense in a bind. You guys have been living that life at St. Thomas More for a while, but the defense this year really has stood out. How do you do that, and what's it like knowing you'll be on the field a good bit?
Well, I mean, that's the goal. The goal really for us is to get on and off the field as quickly as possible, but we have no problem coming from behind. We work well in tough situations, and our main objective is to get the ball back and to get our offense back on the field.
Okay, enough of the X's and O's. I get to have fun with all the student-athletes who come in here. You guys are no exception. You can each take a crack at this. We'll go Cameron and then Nick. Strongest player on the St. Thomas More team?
Noah Frederick, no doubt.
Nick, there's a lot of doubters there. You with that?
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm taking my answer back. Somebody shouted out Grant. St. Cyr. Grant St. Cyr.
Grant.
Okay. Pound for pound. Fastest player on the Cougars?
I'm gonna have to go with Patrick Robichaud. With speed, it's going to have to be Robichaud.
Lambert.
Okay.
Connor Lambert.
I like it. All right, so we got some differences there. And this is where it gets interesting. Smartest player on the team at a pretty smart school. Caleb is looking for some votes.
Yeah, Caleb is definitely a smart football player. As a quarterback, he thinks well under pressure. But on the defense, Reggie. Reggie on the defense for sure. Reggie's book smart.
Usually this is the one where everybody agrees. Who is the funniest player on the team?
Jack Besh. Jack Besh is really funny. That's all I think of right now. Yeah,
for sure.
This is real?
Yeah, Jack Besh. Yeah. Okay. Jack's funny. Jack cracks right. Everybody up.
I like that. Okay. Any coach imitations? Not saying you have to, but just your favorite phrases, right? The ones that you just see in your sleep, basically, at night?
Oh, yeah. Okay. At the end of whenever we're doing sprints and summer workouts, Coach LeBron always lines up. All right, we got O-line, D-line, O-skill, D-skill.
All right, we'll go to you for this one to start, Nick. I ask every school that comes in as well, the punishment that you know is coming, individually or as a team, when you do something wrong, but you just got to man up and do it. You know it's coming and it stinks, but what is that punishment in practice?
Either gassers or just hundreds after. Well, that's different for them, that's for sure.
All right, what's it like for the D?
We do bear crawls. All the way up, we have to pass Coach Tidwell up, and we have to bear crawl all the way back. And they're always on the snap count of two, so if you jump, he backs up farther, and we got to run farther, bear crawl farther.
So hold tight. This would make you the first school that didn't say boards. Do the Cougars not have to do boards?
We do for personal punishments. As for a team, we all are punished together, but if you do something personally that doesn't affect the team necessarily, your punishment would be a board.
We'll get you out of here on this. And Nick, we'll go you, then Cameron. Playing Neville this week, a huge game. I guess, what's it mean to you? What do you think of when you think of a team that's been so good for North Louisiana for so long?
I think it's going to be really important. I mean, obviously it affects where our playoff will be and our seeding. So I think I love the hard games. I think it's our schedule this year is going to be great. I love it. It makes us better. So it's really important to me.
Our energy is high in the locker room and on the practice field. This is a huge game, and a lot goes into it, and a lot will come out of it if we are victorious. And I think that our energy can be high this week, but I think the main thing that we need to focus on during the game is to keep an even head. The team that stays relaxed and it keeps calm in tough situations and in good situations is going to win the game, not the team that gets amped up about big plays or loss of yards and stuff like that.
A couple of seniors did a heck of a job. Give it up. Cameron, and Nick Wolf. And give it up for yourselves as we're coming down toward the end of the program. 112 Cougars have packed into this place. That is an enormous number. And this has been a lot of fun. I want to thank everybody who's joined me so far on the mic. Head coach Jim Hightower, a couple of offensive coaches, Lance Struthers, Shane Savoie, and then the seniors who just stepped up to the mic. STM 3-0, top rated so far in Class 4A, a big matchup against Neville. Then it's Catholic of Baton Rouge, followed by a tough 5-4A slate, and North Vermilion at the end before another playoff run for these Cougars.
I do want to thank the famous Clint D back in our studios. My name is Ben Love, and this has been the Cougars Prep Power Hour. We'll catch you again next week live for Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.